welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb. 97.2 FM, online, RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we're all looking at permutations in association with Flowers Unlimited. Yes, that's right, last weekend's defeat at Newcastle gave Bournemouth and Brentford the chance to leapfrog us as we all look for European qualification. It's the Cherries who are currently in the box seat, and they travel to Fulham this weekend as we face Wolves. With three games left, there's still a lot to play for. In other news, Fabian Hertzler is getting close to signing a contract extension, adding 3 years to his existing contract. And this weekend, the Seagulls head north to take on Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final as they try to make it to Wembley for the final. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back the one and only Andy Bass, and the ever awesome Vicky Rees. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
All right.
Oh, you all sound so thrilled to be here.
It's a bank holiday weekend. I mean, well, you know, that's just been and gone. Yeah. Just exhausting.
It's true. This is very true. But at least we won't have any fire alarms going off today, which
that was annoying.
Which was
so
good.
Just to explain that, I've got to explain it because we did actually have it on the show. And you could pick it up on the. Someone at the open market decided to give away free pizza, so there was a queue literally around the corner. But somewhere down the line, it also hadn't put out proper ventilation, so it just meant the fire alarm was going off about every 5 minutes. Most annoying. I mean, it's nearly as annoying as someone parking a piano right outside the studio this week, as if there isn't a radio studio there.
Or the Lindy Hoppers, that was quite annoying. Anyway.
Oh, they're lovely too.
But I mean, Al, just to reiterate, we were doing the show live on Saturday as part of the Reverbathon. Now, obviously, the Reverbathon is the big fundraiser for Radio Reverb. And if you've missed out on donating, don't worry, you still can.
Yes, I mean, frankly, you can donate to Radio Reverb anytime you see fit. It's just with the Reverbathon, we just kind of concertina all our efforts into one big weekend and a big push. But if you do like what we do and you wish to help keep the radio station independent and advertisement free, just head to RadioReverb.com. There is a donate button on the front page. Hit that. It does go through PayPal. And if you want to round up your figure of donating £10, then you have to add a little bit more. Alternatively, if you want to email us, thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk, I can send you Reverb's bank details to pay into, not the 16-figure number. You're not getting that. So the bank details if you want to do a transfer. But if not, then if you want to keep it simple, just head to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button and follow the links through there. And anything you could donate will be absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and whilst myself and Al were dealing with burning pizzas, Andy and Vicky, you headed to the north. And it sounds very much like it was a brilliant day out, ruined by 90 minutes of football.
Yeah, more or less. It was a great trip and just a very bizarre game.
What was your mode of transport?
Well,
have you seen Planes, Trains and Automobiles?
Oh, that.
All right.
That's not a pillow.
We utilised trains, planes and buses were all used.
And an automobile.
And an automobile.
You didn't do one of those things of flying to Warsaw and then getting a flight to Newcastle because it was 10 quid or something, did you?
No. Just if we'd got the train on the day, we worked out that it would have been about 250 quid each. Sorry about the helicopter flying overhead. To fly up to get the train up the day before and fly back on the day was about 50 quid each way. So it was a bargain. Although we did later, once we were on the train, we did find out why it was so cheap, because we've now concluded that I think they're called Lumo are in fact the Ryanair of train companies.
It's not one of those where they've got converted buses and stuck them on a rail, is it?
It might as well have been.
Well, I mean, from what I can work out, you did actually discover a new wine. So it's not all bad.
We did, yes. We planned for the inevitable power failure delays by, lubricating the journey somewhat.
Well, I mean, the game itself then, guys, I mean, it's a game you shouldn't have really lost, Andy.
No, but it's a It's bizarre. It was a bizarre game. We were the better team in it, but we didn't deserve to win it because we just made too many calamitous mistakes in front of both our goal and their goal. We actually played some really good football. I finally got round to looking at the highlights earlier today, and the misses were even worse than I remembered, and the mistakes were just as bad as I remembered. We let ourselves down, and so I think a Newcastle fan asked us after the game at the airport if he thought that we thought they deserved it, and I said, "Well, yeah, you did. You took your chances. You know, I can't say we deserved to win. We didn't."
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the chances that we gave them, Vicky, were that completely gift wrapped, though.
Yeah, and I think, Andy's right. I think, there was a big difference between that defeat and the sort of defeats we were having in that bad run earlier in the season. Everyone thinks back to that Palace game at home when we just looked utterly clueless. We looked terrified of losing. We weren't really doing anything other than knocking it around the back. And I think this was really different to that. We played some nice football. We were quite incisive when it came to getting it forward. We looked creative. But the final ball or the finish was just miles off. And unusually for us, the defence looked really weak. Players that are normally very reliable, like Van Hekker, like Boscagli in the last few games, they didn't have particularly effective games. So, and that's unusual. So it was frustrating because I don't particularly think Newcastle are a great side at the moment, certainly, but I think they probably just out-muscled us on the day.
Yeah, I mean, losing Vifa early on as well, Andy. I mean, it kind of disrupted the plan.
Yeah, I think that was probably a bigger blow than we realised at the time, to be honest, because we were getting exploited down both wings, throughout the rest of the game. We played particularly high up, and we were leaving space behind. And I don't know, Weaver just that doesn't seem to have been caught out that much recently in that department. But it never hurt. It never helps when you have a key player leave the game so early.
Yeah,
It was, yeah, really unfortunate.
I mean, Matt's Vicky has been struggling a little bit of an injury. He's had it for the last couple of months, and they've been nursing him through training a little bit. So perhaps it's not a total surprise that he limped out so early.
To be fair, I wasn't aware of that. I didn't think performance-wise he did anything wrong in the short time he was on the pitch. And of the fullbacks there, to be fair, I thought it was probably one of Ferdy's less effective games, bearing in mind how completely consistent he's been lately. I didn't think, I think he had a tough time in that game, Ferdy, like most of them did. You could look at, obviously, you could look at Bart with the mistake for the goal. I don't know where he was going with that one, but he was only ever going to concede a free kick and get booked, or we concede a goal, and unfortunately, it was the goal. So, there wasn't really anybody that stood out in that game, unless you count poor old Minte, who, unfortunately, and I like Minte, but he was playing the whole game like he was wearing clown shoes, unfortunately for him.
I mean, he does do that against Newcastle, though. I mean, don't forget he was at Newcastle, and basically as part of their
I have
we're
not forgotten
having all the money in the
myself.
world, we're going to have to sell our players because we don't
He's previously
tick the
done well
boxes.
against them, whether by luck or judgment. He's previously, I think, he's scuffed a couple of goals or certainly some assists in games against them. So, they've probably had a little bit. There was the one where he scored, I think, at the Amex, and he didn't celebrate, and maybe in the cup game last season, he didn't really celebrate like he owed them something, which was really bizarre. But yeah, it was an unfortunate game. There was times when I think two or three times in a row he knocked it past the fullback, Andy. I think you remember that one, and like he was going to chase after the ball, but knocked it straight out of play. And then they all laughed, and then he did it again. And I think I did it a third time. I was like, oh God, it was. You almost felt sorry for him. And I think when the subs boards went up at one point, he was looking across like, this is going to be me, and he stayed on. But it's just one of those days. I'm not angry about the defeat as such, because sometimes everyone has a bad day at the office, don't they? And I think most of them pick the same day to have it. So let's hope we
Yeah,
can pick it up.
but I mean,
Can I just pick up what you're saying about Minte there? And the thing I'd say about him is that, yeah, we all love him. He's got plenty of spirit about him. There's plenty of talent and plenty of skill. But unlike someone, let's say, Pascal Gross or Jack Hinshelwood, he doesn't come across as someone who's got what I would say a football brain. And by that, I don't mean it's full of air and he can bounce it around. What I mean is that those really good players, those that see three, four, five passes ahead. I mean, Hinch would, like I say, he's already got his UEFA B badge. He's kind of got an idea of the tactics and the things going on around him. Whereas Minte, sort of, in almost in all the time he's been with us, is a kind of a head down player. You know, sort of one setting, which is dribble. Because sometimes, I mean, when he puts a really good cross in, it's unplayable. But then another cross will come in and it ends up in row Z. So, yeah, I love him to bits. And what you're describing there is kind of classic Minte. You know, you get frustrated with him and then he'll do something absolutely magic, which in this instance was to balloon the ball over the bar.
And
Oh, that miss was bad. That was really bad. I mean,
unfortunately,
we've seen him do this before. I mean, that game at Southampton last season where he completely Devon locked it at one point, and like it was just. You know, he has these games where he just can't hit, like, well, he just can't hit the target, basically.
but like a lot of players, there's certainly a lot of our creative players, they're ones who are better when they come on as substitutes. It's bizarre.
Okay, but we did have a lot of chances before Newcastle opened the scoring, and one of the best ones fell to Jack Hindlewood, which was a wonderful ball from Karuma Toma. But I mean, do you think he should have done better? I mean it was
Well,
a good
should
save
have
by Pope.
scored, yes. Yes. I mean, again, I mean, I've just praised Jack Hinshelwood for having a football brain, but what he's clearly not, and as much as he's as versatile as he's not a natural born goal scorer. I think it's one of those things he's got to learn. You'd like to think that most of the others, certainly Danny Welbeck, and you know, when he comes back to playing for us, hopefully next season, Evan Ferguson and you know, Kostoulas and what have you, that they would know exactly where to pick their spot. Whereas I think Hinshelwood, always seeming to be about half a pace off it, just stretched his foot and it was within Pope's reach. Frankly, he should have actually given Pope absolutely no chance because he was still only, what, 16 yards out, but he was just off balance. I think he did the right thing by taking it first time, but yes, of course, he should have done a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, you say he's not a natural goal scorer, but he did score arguably what could possibly be the goal of the season.
I mean, he knows how to, but what I mean is that when I say a natural goal scorer, he's someone who can bang them away more times than not.
And then, of course, Belabor hit the bar, which was just unlucky. It was, and then obviously they did open the scoring, and it was that rush of blood to the head from Bart, as Vicky correctly said, he went wandering into no man's land. I'm not quite sure what he was thinking. And actually, Murphy did well to actually get back up on his feet because he could have quite easily stayed down, and Bart could have been in. Well, you reckon it would have been a yellow card? I think you're right, because there was a covering defender. But you know, he did clean him out completely, but nowhere near the ball.
Yeah, I think it was a yellow all day for me, but actually, once they scored, he didn't even get the yellow, so he was off the hook a little bit there. But yeah, the guy would have only been going towards the touchline. He was quite way wide, so I didn't see it as a goal scoring opportunity in the traditional sense. But yeah, he's dropped it there, isn't he? But I'm struggling to think of many other saves he made in the game, which probably tells you enough about Newcastle. There wasn't a lot going on, was there, Andy?
No, Bart made one good save from close range. I think the commentator on the Albion website gave him a bit too much credit because it kind of like kicked it straight at him, but he sort of cleared it. But yeah, there was really no reason for Bart to go out for that ball because there were defenders. Yeah, Boscagli was behind, so the chances are Murphy was going to get the cross in. But there were defenders there, and if he was there, then they should have been out, would have had a chance to cope with it. And it just seemed really reckless to me. It was a very, very poor decision.
The only thing I would have
And
said
it was quite disappointing, to be honest.
is if he has made his mind up to do that and realise he isn't going to get the ball, then he'd have been oddly enough better off clattering the fella because he'd have got his yellow card. It wouldn't have been a red, but I mean, when I say clattering, I mean in a way that he really isn't going to get up and get the ball. I know it
He
sounds.
actually didn't touch him.
I didn't think he did.
What he did was he put him off. Murphy took evasive action, and to his credit, he got up and put in a really good cross. So I think you've got to give Murphy some credit for that. That was actually a good bit of skill by
I
him.
mean, like I say, if you're going to come out and actually then try and get it and realize you can't, like I say, it's cynical. And it was not, it was, like I say, you're right, Vicky, it was never going to be a red card offence unless it was really violent. But it was certainly not a dog show because he was miles wide and, it was actually outside the penalty area. I mean, that's the other thing is that by the time he arrived there, they were outside the area. So it's not as though, I mean, getting, clattering the fellow would have been probably the least worst option.
Okay, well, Newcastle did make it 2-0 shortly after that, and Dan Burn made a mockery of the no celebration by celebrating. And I don't think anyone can blame him too much, can you?
Vicky,
He
can you get your head around
don't
this whole
fall,
no
not one.
celebration thing?
No, but the thing is, he's a Newcastle player. He's Newcastle born and bred. Why wouldn't he? He scored against us before and celebrated anyway. So I didn't expect him not to. No.
But I mean, it was a poor goal to concede. It was the zonal marking thing again. I mean, they've clearly seen us at corners and the way that we operate, and it was just a really good training ground mood from Newcastle that took advantage of us.
I don't
Yeah,
think
I
he's done
mean,
that much credit. Dan Burn's 6 foot 7, and they put the corner on his head. That doesn't
are you
sit
saying that he's tall?
genius to me.
He's not tall. Nobody's never ever mentioned this before, ever in the world, ever.
No.
No, it's just the run he made from the back post to the front. The person closest to him was Henshaw, who, even if he was trying to get inside his shirt at the same time, wouldn't have been able to jump high enough to get to it. It was just, I mean, it's just one of those times where, and let's face it, how many times have we been frustrated with Albion corners where it was actually a perfectly executed corner and a perfectly executed run across them? If Dunk would have been marking him, then I think he'd have struggled to get there. So, yeah, I think again, I mean, it's so easy to say, oh, it was poorly done because he was unmarked. It's because he's huge. I mean, as Vicky said, because he's huge. That's what
Okay.
he's there for. They have that advantage. You
Yeah.
know, sadly, Brighton didn't take advantage of that when he was playing for us enough, on account of the fact that sometimes a lot of our corner taking is terrible.
And it has been for quite some time. But actually, you mentioned Lewis Dunk there. Obviously, he's not got his place back immediately, like he has done previously. Obviously, there was some lackluster performances from our defenders in this game. Do you think Dunk comes back in next week now?
Yeah, I think he does. Unfortunately for Olivier, he didn't look that great on
What
Saturday.
concerns you?
Well, for what, ironically, I mean, this applies to Dunk as well, but his complete lack of pace when chasing back for the first goal, he was massively caught out. And I just think, he's been rewarded with good performances, but I think I think we might see Lewis play against Wolves, just to ease him back in. But I would have to say I'm not singling out Olivier. I didn't think JP had a good game either,
No.
and I thought his collapse for their third, or admittedly it was at the end of, right at the end of the game, he was probably knackered, but again, I crumpled into a heap. He could have done better with a Sula for the first goal as well. He didn't time his jump well. He went a bit late, so a Sula was basically going to have a free header for that first goal. So all in all, it was just an uncharacteristically ragged performance from the centre halves
I've got to be
this
honest with you, though,
weekend.
Andy. Don't forget, if you go back to the Spurs game, Van Hekker dropped a couple of dropsies as well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I was particularly critical of Van Hekker after the Spurs game. I thought he had a poor game.
But when
But
you're
you
talking about.
know,
Sorry, carry on,
no, no,
Andy.
go on, Vicky, go on.
No, I was just going to say, when you're talking about Dunk, just going on from what Andy's just said there, we're talking about Dunk and just playing devil's advocate there based on recent performances. You could make an argument that it should be Van Hekker that gets dropped, not Bisceglia,
Yeah, he
but
could.
you definitely could make that
You could make
argument.
that argument.
Perhaps it's the likes of Van. Perhaps Van Hecker needs Dunk alongside him just to pep himself up a bit. Who knows? I mean, there's one thing about a poor performance, but it's also about sort of the partner, the leader that you've had. As much as we're saying Van Hecker, if he stays, could be a future Brighton captain, et cetera, is he a natural born leader if he doesn't have the likes of Dunk next to him?
I mean, really, just like, I mean, looking at the stats, Newcastle made 44 clearances in that game. We only had to make 18 clearances. They only had two corners, which they scored from one. They only passed the ball 237 times compared to our
Yeah.
506.
67% possession for us.
It's like they had plenty of shots on target. Really, they did have six shots on target, but none of them really threatened the goal in the way that, Kostoulis and Hinshelwood forced Pope into two very good saves. The one from Kostoulis in particular was really good because
It was actually better than his goal,
he
wasn't
actually
it?
wellied that overhead kick.
But should Kostoulis have had that chance? Because I mean, Chow basically was playing basketball. It was handball. It was a penalty from Grace's shot.
I didn't
I
think so.
don't know. I think it was too close. I think
I mean, it was
I,
really
I, even
smack
even
against him.
obviously
His
at the
arm was
time,
in an unnatural position. It's a penalty. Gross was
well, he
doing
was
his
trying to get it
nut.
out of the way. If anything, he was trying to get it out of the way. You could see it was behind, almost behind him. No, I wouldn't have gone for that one myself.
No. I agree. I didn't think it was handball. I just think you just don't have too much chance to react in that circumstance. But I've seen them given
We've had them given against
because
us many
the
times.
handball rule is basically the referee and VAR saying, well, whatever you want, Cad, fill your boots, be creative with your decision making.
Yeah, looking at you, Bournemouth against Palace.
Yeah, there's a few bizarre ones this week. But like, I mean, we did play some liquid football in this game, and there was, and this is something we've seen over the last week, few weeks, that we are. Quick passing has been absolutely a delight to watch, and there was one particular move, obviously, in this game which resulted in that goal. I mean, I can't remember us scoring a goal like that since the one at Stoke.
I'm
Which it
thinking
was.
actually in terms of the João Pedro one against Marseille. That's what it reminded me of. Anyone?
Well,
No.
yeah, from where we were in the away end, you could hardly see it anyway. So
Yeah.
I've
Fair
seen
enough.
it very briefly on Instagram. I think I haven't bothered watching Match of the Day. Sorry, I should have done that before I did
Yeah,
this.
we got.
They didn't mention it on Match of the Day at all.
No, I
Yeah,
mean,
but
no,
I
we
didn't
just saw
watch
the
Match of
game.
the Day. I didn't
They
watch
did.
Match of the Day
No,
this
they
weekend.
did show it. Believe me, everyone, they did show it. No,
Oh, they showed
it
it, but they didn't discuss it
no,
at
that's fine.
all, or
It's
us.
about how good Newcastle were at closing Brighton down.
Yeah, that was it. That was absolutely
Yeah,
it.
you could tell that by the number of shots we had, and the number of saves Pope had to make. No, it was just that sort of nature of enterprise. It's almost overdoing it, and yet, and actually, to be fair, Hinshelwood's, as much as I said, he's not a natural born one. The way he took it was actually really, really good. I just want to see him do that every time. And if he did, if he's going to be playing in that position next season, and with the bare minimum that any fan would want is just improvement on the previous season. If he learns how to finish better, I mean, he's destined for double figures next season. At the rate we're going here, it's not going to be one of my predictions because, like I say, he could end up playing right back again. But I think he's done okay in the position he's playing. It's just, like I say, he's. I don't know, sometimes he sees the goal, and when he looks up, he realizes the goal's tiny. Or he thinks the goal's tiny. And he hurries and scuffs his shot, but there's certainly something there.
What he does do is get into good positions that other people don't. And I would say, another player that I might, another stalwart that I might have a little minor go at. I thought Danny had a very poor game as well. He wasn't really in good positions to score. And when we had that opportunity to bring it back to 2-1, where the ball rebounded off Hinch and hit the crossbar. hit the post rather. It's just like, so it's like probably when I realized the game is over, with that bit of luck. But Danny was actually moving away from the goal when Hinch was like running in, and so there was no chance of anyone get of him getting there for the rebound. And I just think a little bit more awareness in that situation. I'm kind of like, I am nitpicking here, but
Are you talking about the time when Pope belted it against Hinchcliffe?
yeah, but Pope belted it against Hinch and it hit the post, and then but there was no one to follow up.
Well, to be fair, I think that is slight nitpicking on account of the fact that because you're expecting Pope to belt it up the pitch, then you don't want Danny sort of right on top on the 6 yard line because then he's way out of position. I mean, it's just I think that's unlucky. I mean, clearly it was unlucky. It was just when your luck's in, your luck's in. When it's not, then sorry, might as well go home, and you've come a bloody long way for it. But I think that's harsh. But having said that, I take your point that generally there are games when Welbeck is just like, that someone's gone herring down the line, crossing across the 6 yard box. And let's face it, he is a good sniffer. Where the bloody hell are you?
Yeah,
You know. It was unlucky not to get on the end of I think it was a Pascal cross, which also eluded Van Hekker.
JP at the far post, but yeah.
I mean, I think some of our players didn't do themselves any justice, but we did create a lot of chances. We were the better team, but I think we kind of got what we deserved out of the game, which was like
And that's not
nothing.
necessarily for the effort. It's more to do with the fact of you've got to
Yeah,
defend
it's
well,
just
you've got to
ex
attack well. Apart
yeah.
from that, the basics, in other words.
Take your chances, you win the game. Simple as that. And it's like, I mean, I think that if Minte takes that chance at the end, that makes it 2-2. I think we might have actually gone on to win it,
Yeah,
possibly.
maybe.
But it was when you're chasing the game, that's what happens. And it was that their third goal was very much against the run of play. But we move on. I mean, it's just a shame that the other results, with obviously Brentford and Bournemouth both winning, so they're now in the box league. We'll come to that in a bit. But just before we move on for this, I mean, obviously that Hinch goal was just so I'm just purring over it. I mean, the goal of the season compilation this year, and the competition for it, it's wide open. I can't call it.
Well, don't then.
Yeah.
But I mean,
And it's not, to be
you
fair,
got
AD, it's not only down to you.
the. Well, we've got our own competition, haven't we? But it's like, the Kostoulas overhead kick, Mitoma trying to retain it. Actually, he did win the match of the day, goal of the month competition for that goal at Spurs. So that's
Oh,
something.
fantastic. Yeah, what is that?
So he's in the running to retain his trophy.
I'd have just found it funny if he'd have knocked that chance in against at the beginning of the game against Chelsea, where you then get to realise that Chelsea really weren't paying attention to what had happened the previous Saturday, and that one goal of the month.
That was a really good save from Sanchez, though. We're going to give
Oh
him
yeah.
some credit. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Alan.
Oh, is it? Oh, yes, so it is. So it is indeed. So if you head over to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, you will find a nicely wide shop called Flowers Unlimited. They are very good enough to sponsor the Albion Roar. They will be selling you, if you so desire them, bunches of flowers, bouquets of flowers, those that say thank you, those that say happy birthday, those that say happy anniversary, those that say get stuffed, and all points in between. There you can also get your gift cards there, boxes of chocolate, champagne, and any gifts for those loved ones or someone else's loved ones, should you be that way inclined. You can also get their stuff online, www.flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. Or like I say, just head to 175 to 177 Portland Road in Hove. And if you do wish to purchase their products, then just do tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, because it'll then get you a 20% discount, which is actually very nice indeed. So thanks indeed to Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited for sponsoring the Albion Roar.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we did touch on this on the show last week, but we just want to like get your viewpoints on it, Vicky and Andy. It's a big week for the women's team with the FA Cup semi-final coming up this weekend, and obviously the big news of with the stadium announcement for them. It's just moved on so quickly, hasn't it, Andy?
Well, I don't think it's moved on quickly.
Not really, no.
No, I think it's moved on quite slowly, but it is tremendous news, and. Yeah, it's just really exciting. It just, I think, the real launch pad for the Albion women's team and women's football in Sussex. It's really exciting, and it's nice that the Albion once again are sort of like leading the way in sort of, you know, progressive matters, right. Basically. It's absolutely amazing. I can't wait till they start building it. I can't wait to go and see the She Girls in there.
The irony is they have to ask Lewis District Council.
Yeah, well, good luck, Lewis, stopping that.
Vicky, obviously this is sort of huge news. It's gained a lot of traction. It's got a lot of people upset because they're trolls and idiots. But when you first heard it, I mean, obviously we knew the news was coming, but when you saw what the project was and how it was happening, and what were your thoughts, and obviously with the time that's passed, how do you feel about the whole project?
I think, like Andy said, you know, it's an indication of the kind of wider strategy of the club, that they that they are thinking about everyone involved and not just viewing the women's team as something that they have to kind of humour, which is the case with some clubs. You know, you can look at much bigger clubs than us and their
Man United
women's team. Well, I wouldn't have said it, Aidy, but you obviously just have. But yeah, it's we'll just kind of humour the women's team, but we won't give them too much. But actually, you know, there's a lot of different sort of arguments for it, but you know, you are demonstrating to the female players of now and the future female players that this is a club that really values what they can bring to the club. And if people, you know, in any organization, if you demonstrate to your employees that you value them, then they're going to produce better things. And I think, you know, for players, you know, we've got Frank Kirby at the moment, but I'm not suggesting we're suddenly going to go out and sign, you know, Elatoun and Alessio Russo and people like that. But further down the line, you know, there is an element of people going, well, do you know what? Some of these other clubs, they're not really very supportive. And actually, you know, Brighton, that is the case. I've also seen, you know, numerous sort of comments from people with daughters who have started to play and they're really excited about it. People who may not follow the men's team, but who have seen what Brighton and Hove Albion are doing, and that's a fantastic thing. I think, you know, there's been all of the whys, why do they need this and why do they need that? You know, the same people who in some cases have said previously, why do they need to play at the Amex? Why can't they just play at Crawley? And now we've talked about this new build, they're going, well, why can't they just play at the Amex? And they just don't get why it's not suitable. And actually having, you know, 10,000 people in that new stadium is going to be so much more productive for those players than having, you know, one stand of the Amex open with six thousand people in there. And, you know, I think there's just an awful lot to be gained from it and not very much to lose.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, it's another sort of an £80 million investment from Tony Bloom. He's throwing that another sort of big wedge on the table. Hopefully, I think somewhere down the line he's looking for funding and from public bodies that he can get. But yeah, the whole notion that of people querying it is basically they'll create, it's almost like they'll fabricate a notion as to, you know, their own incomplete logic, shall we say, and then ask a question on the back of the assumption that their logic is correct. Whereas the likes of us, now admittedly we do keep our ear to the ground, we like to know what the Albion's thinking is. and then we'll at least we'll comment on that. It's not the commenting on what we as fans are thinking, it's commenting on what the club are thinking and what it means to us. Because in the great scheme of things, I am going to say this, maybe controversial, but I'd like to think that the club actually do look after its fans to a given extent. There are many who say, oh, they're just there to make money. Well, your point is, if you don't make money, you're not going to get the players in you want. We're not going to have the success, et cetera, et cetera. Something has to give. Oh, then you're just corporate stuff. Well, okay, so someone else is paying for it rather than you. So each argument falls down by the time you've got to the end of the question. And I think the Albion can see through that, know the logic, understand it. And as Vicky's just pointed out, there's those who have said, their girls are supporting Chelsea or Arsenal, whoever it might be, and they see what the Albion are doing and almost overnight switch allegiances. And as much as you're saying, we're not necessarily going to go and buy Ella Toon and Alicia Russo or whoever it might be, but we do now have a better chance of getting them should we want them.
But don't forget that Alessio Russo did actually used to play for us.
Well, I mean, get her back then, yeah.
But it's like, but I mean, it is, I just think it's a massive statement of intent though, because I mean, obviously this is going to be only the third purpose-built stadium for women athletes. And it sends out a message, it's going to be the first one in Europe. Real Madrid don't have one. Barcelona don't have one. Wolfsburg, these massive clubs in the women's game, they don't have their own stadium purpose-built for them.
Kansas being your first city, though?
Yeah.
But I think it's also different to those US teams as well, because they're kind of their own entity, aren't they? Whereas, in the US, the women's teams are generally not linked to the men's teams.
Mm-hmm.
They're their own clubs in their own right. So, whereas in Europe, with the exception of the London, whatever they're called these days, London City Lionesses, virtually every club is affiliated to a men's club or a traditionally men's club, let's say, in this respect. So actually, in that sense, it is completely different to anything else because, why wouldn't Kansas City have one? Because they don't play at the men's stadium because they're not the same club as the men's. So,
yeah.
I mean, we had this nonsense with Birmingham City fans online saying, oh, we're getting one as part of their sports city. And I think, yes, they are getting a women's stadium, but it's not a bespoke, purpose-built one. It's a stadium in which the women can play. But it also means that there'll be sort of smaller local sides to play. I mean, the interesting point the club is saying about the men's academy side playing there, which is actually, I think, a really good thing. I mean, you can watch the academy side play. I was watching them admittedly on YouTube last night. They beat West Ham 3-0. Very good performance. But it's getting out to Lance and getting to a place that doesn't actively encourage you to go there. You can go and watch an academy game, you can watch an under-21s game, and it's free, and all you have to do is ask the club or apply to the club, and the first 50 or 100, whatever it is, get to go there. But the notion of going to the Amex, and incidentally, for all the other people with the twisted logic, no, the men's and the women's side won't be playing at the same time.
That's a bit of a mess.
The other thing I think is that people sometimes miss that. Yes, there is a bit of crossover. There are, of course, people who watch the men every week who go to the women, watch the women every week or as much as they can. But there is that bit of crossover, but there is also a completely separate audience for the women's team, especially in someone like Brighton and Hove. And there are, I know people, I've got friends who go and watch the women who've never watched the men. And they do it because it's a social thing, because it's what their friends and family do. It's a different atmosphere. And whilst we all enjoy the atmosphere at men's games, mostly, that they enjoy, they've never had that. And that their first experience of watching football has been watching the women, and they really enjoy that. So I think, this should actually generate a real kind of sense of ownership from those kind of people. And it will get more people in, especially from the city of Brighton and Hove and the near surrounds, rather than, if you live in Brighton and you kind of like football and want to try it, but can you be asked to get in a car and drive to Crawley to sit in their quite crap stadium? I would suggest, the evidence suggests that clearly that isn't generally the case. So, I've never really bothered, but I would definitely be interested in going watching them at the Wamex.
Is that what you're calling
I see
it?
what you did there.
Is
I
it the
see what you did.
Wamex?
But I mean, it's very exciting. It's obviously a story which we're going to be following. And I mean, it's going to be
Can I just, in
opening.
that case, can I just ask? I mean, I think I know the answer here. I think I'm pushing an open door here. One, two, three, four. Are we all going to go when it opens?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good fun. I'm going to the Albion against Spurs women's game Saturday week. Looking forward to it. Yes, it's at the Amex, and Vicky's point is absolutely right. Yeah, there's going to be 3, 4, 5 thousand people there, and it's not conducive to a great atmosphere. But if you've got even if you've got the same 5,000 in a 10,000 atmosphere in a 10,000 stadium, then everything changes.
Okay.
And the other thing is that yeah, Vicky is right. It is a different crowd. It is a different atmosphere. It's a different. You have to just forget the whole notion of comparing men's football against women's football. It has no value to do so. It is a different beast. The fact that is yes, they're football clubs or they're football teams, and they play under one banner, one badge. That's great. So, what is it about so many people that think that this should be for men only? It doesn't scan, and it's almost as if I'm not, because I think again I'm pushing an open door, but there's a side of me that wants to go just to stick two fingers up at those who say, you know, women don't have a place here.
Okay. Well, good luck to the girls this weekend. They're in the cup semi-final. At St Helens, which is a ground I don't think has been on the telly since the 1980s on grandstand, I don't think. But it's against Liverpool. It's a 12:15 kickoff, and it's live on Channel 4. So let's all, hopefully we're going to watch those girls get themselves to Wembley, which should be absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. But
And let's
okay,
face,
so
sorry, just one quick thing. And let's face it, who's the other two semi-finalists? Chelsea and
it's
Man
Chelsea and
City.
Man City.
Yeah, teams that we've beaten recent, not that long ago. So, you know, I mean, is this a dangerous thing? Dare we hope? I mean, if you go 3, 4 years back, and we'd sort of mossed our way to the semi-final, you think, oh, you know, we've done well here. That looks really good. I think we've got. No, I'm not going to say it. No, because it'll
No,
jinx it. I'm not going to
it's a
say
good chance.
it.
Okay, well, in the news this week, it hasn't yet been signed, sealed, and delivered, but it will be, and that's Fabian Hertzler extending his stay with us, which is when you look back to the reaction after that Palace game, it's a massive. I mean, the fact that we've seen the performance improve dramatically over the last few weeks, anyway, it's a massive feather in his cap, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, well, and he's fully deserved it. And I'm glad that they appear to have sorted it out, which means that we can go into the summer knowing exactly who's in charge, and with as minimum disruption as possible. I saw that game against Palace as well. I realised how utterly awful it was, and I vented my spleen on a elsewhere where broadcasting rules permit the
Well, you collapse into
colloquial
the
language.
Anglo-Saxon vernacular a bit better.
Yeah, but for me, Hertz has always looked like a decent manager. I think he's got an unusual style of play, but I think it is distinctive, and is distinctively his. He's also quite pragmatic. He's quite happy to sort of change and adjust it. It's not my way or the highway with him. He will make adjustments to, make the best use of the players at his disposal. He's not sort of like a total ideologue in that way. Also, I recognise that he's basically come to us from the German second division, and whilst he was successful there, the Premier League is completely different. It's a much higher standard. And when you think that he's come from a lower standard of football, he has adapted very, very quickly to it.
No,
I think he
but he's learning
conducts
on the job, isn't he?
yeah he's learning on the job, but I think he but he's clearly paying attention and doing his homework. There's still 3 games left to go, but there's potential for us to get European football next season, and that will be quite simply astonishing, especially when we endured a bad run, which was more bad luck than bad performances. The Palace game was a bad performance, and I'm not sugarcoating that at all. It was awful, but the other games, there was elements of misfortune in there, not taking chances, just
VAR.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. You know, there was mitigating circumstances to it, but mentally he held that squad together really tough, and he's dragged them out of it.
Yeah.
And he's been consistent in his messaging to the players. He's, you know, it's annoying if you're an employee being told to work hard all the time and saying, like, if you do this, then, you know, good things will happen. But he says that to them, and then they do put the work in, and then the success does come. And he's basically saying, see, I told you if you did that, we'd win.
Yeah.
And you know, we've been doing that more often than not
Yeah,
lately. And
and Vicky, I mean, he's also had to deal with the fact we've had quite a lot of players that have been seriously out of form over periods this season. I mean, like Georgie for it is a classic example. Belaba, another one who we know that there's a brilliant player there, but their performances have just haven't quite been there. So he's managed to turn that round, and we're actually seeing that the performances are getting better from these players. And he was talking about this, about the fact that, yeah, Georgie was having a bad time, and he was we had to work with him and get his mentality back up again. So I mean, that's the job you don't necessarily see when you're sitting in the stands, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's what you hope any good manager would do. And I agree with Andy that, you know, we can be incredibly black and white when we talk about football. And there is generally a massive culture of short-termism across the game. And the same applies to any club, doesn't it? That as soon as you lose two or three games, people are, or maybe three or four, but probably two if you're Chelsea, but, you know, or Watford, as soon as you are. Yeah, you lose a few games, then suddenly, oh, he's lost the dressing room based on absolutely nothing. And you know, it's one of the most cliched, rubbish things ever, I think, losing the dressing room. But, you know, I agree. I think we weren't in that run we had earlier in the season, with the obvious exception of Palace at home. We generally, it's a real case of fine margins. And we were not too bad, but just not getting the run of the rub of the green. Likewise, even in the run where we had sort of five or six wins out of seven. Some of those performances weren't spectacular. Burnley away was very workmanlike, job done. You know, even Brentford away was pretty clinical, but not spectacular. It wasn't exactly, you know, so I think ironically in that game at Newcastle at the weekend, we probably played some of the better football than we have in some of the other games, and we've come out of it with nothing. But I think, you know, that, like you said, Hertzler is learning on the job, as we all do. I think you look at some of the clubs in the Premier League and how quickly they get through managers, and you look at the clubs that are actually doing all right and maybe exceeding expectations. They're the ones that have sort of had that exercised a bit of stability. Everton have had bad runs. They've stuck with Moyes. Brentford had a quite poor run at one stage, and they stuck. You know, they didn't. There was no suggestion they'd sack Andrews. You know, and even when Thomas Frank first joined Brentford, I think they lost 9 out of his first 10 games. But there was never any question that they were going to get rid of him because they were looking at the quality of the performances. So I think, you know, with Hertz there, he's demonstrated what he can do. If we give him the chance to show that experience next season, it should be good. And off, you know, to look at it the other way, if someone does come in from over the summer, we're getting more money for him now. So it's hopefully a win-win.
I mean, you're saying at the top of this, AD, about sort of a whole run of bad performances. I don't recall a run of bad performances. The fact that both Vicky and Andy, and yourself at times as well, but have only zeroed in on one bad performance. I mean, let's talk about, you know, this calendar year.
There was a few, Al.
No, there weren't. No, not this year. Not this calendar year. I mean, it was part of that run. There weren't bad performances. Like I say, there's the Fulham game, the Everton game, Bournemouth game. We talk about this a lot. They weren't bad performances per se. And those, that, as Vicky said, those games that we did win after that bad run weren't necessarily measurably better in terms of performance. It's just we got either the rub of the green, or we got, you know, we didn't concede in the last minute, or those kind of things. Because it's not as though we thrashed anyone. A lot of those wins were, you know, 2-1. There weren't a series of bad performances. It's the it can't it was a bad run of results that culminated in a really bad performance against Palace, and of course one just sort of the momentum just boosted up on that. And then there's the notion of the some of the fans booing you getting sacked in the morning. Oh my God, isn't this different? I remember talking to a football journalist up at Spurs a couple of weeks ago about how, you know, Hertzler's turned it round, and, you know, because it looked like he was on his way out. And I'm thinking, Well, if we understand Tony Bloom's and Paul Barber's mindset, there's absolutely no way Hertzler was going at that point, even then, because it completely upsets Barber's and Bloom's plans.
But you they know, judge all clubs by the media find it really easy to judge all clubs by the same standards. So, yes. You know, if we lose a game, they will assume that we'll have our fans will have the same reaction as, for example, Chelsea's fans. You know, that's how simplistic the view is of football from some of these, you know, the sort of top in inverted commas journalists.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. I mean, we've had this so many times. I mean, Graham Potter, I remember, lost six in a row, and then his next game, yeah, he beat Man U 4-0, and everything was rosy in the garden again. And again, Vicky's point about short-termism. And, you know, it's almost, it's something I've noticed even more so in the last couple of years, is if there is a home defeat, i.e. an away win, automatically, not necessarily entire chorus, but automatically there are boos, as if a home game is supposed to automatically get a win, and therefore if you've lost, your team's rubbish, and so on. I mean, I've heard it where we've lost the game at home and it was a tight game. Forget the Palace thing, but you know, it's either we're 1-0 down at half time and some are booing. You think, is this the nature of your mindset? Were you always like this, or do you just feel empowered to do so because now that we're a quote top 10 side, that we have to have this level of entitlement? The notion of it, I mean, Bloom and Barber, let's face it, this football club, in terms of hiring and firing players and staff and what have you, is not a democracy. So even if the fans are demanding X, Y, Z, Bloom and Barber will do what's right for the club. And if that means fans are going to vote with their feet, that's another matter entirely. It's about what they want to get out of the playing staff. Once upon a time, it was solely on the number of bums on seats. Now it doesn't work necessarily like that. It's about how a plan is going. Yeah. And again, sometimes there is an opportunity, you know, when things are going badly, you've got to tweak this, you've got to do that. Or in the case of Bloom and Barber, who know what they're doing, just keep going on down the road.
Okay. Well, we've got three games left, and the table is very much alive still. There's still a lot to play for at both ends of the table and in the middle. I mean, we were saying on the show last week that like 4 points is separating six from 12 still. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, Brentford and Bournemouth leapfrogged us at the weekend. They've both got a tougher run than us, I think.
Have they got to play each other?
No, there's no six pointers in there.
Bournemouth have got Fulham away at the weekend, which I would argue at this stage of the season, Fulham away is not a hard fixture unless you're us, obviously.
Yeah. But I mean, Bournemouth, Fulham away, City Fulham at home, away. Forest away is the last three games, and Brentford have got City away, Palace at home, and Liverpool away.
Well, I think, you know, Brentford away to Man City, they could easily throw a spanner in the works, a bit like Everton did the other day for Man City. I mean, yeah. I would suggest that Palace at this stage of the season is going to be a fairly easy game for Brentford, looking at how they turned up at Bournemouth the other day, or didn't turn up at Bournemouth. They're on the beach, aren't they? They know they're not going anywhere apart from to the Johnson's Paint Europa Trophy final. And I don't know what their last game was, but Bournemouth looked to me to have a fairly comfortable run in there.
Well, ours isn't too horrific, is it?
No, but they're in the driving seat, aren't they, with their position in the league?
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone can throw a spanner in anywhere. Right? So as much as you expect them to turn Fulham over, then Fulham will throw a spanner in works. And that's just the nature of how this...
Brentford do have a decent record at the Etihad, though, don't they? I'm sure under Thomas Frank, they turned over two seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Well, Liverpool are still trying to... Well, they've pretty much secured their Champions League spot, I think.
I was told when... I was on the Anfield... I was on the Anfield Wrap last week and someone did actually nail it as to what our possibility of getting Champions League is. In other words, finishing sixth is that Villa have to win the Europa League and finish in fifth, and no other combination will work. I don't know how that is. If they finish in fourth and win it, we don't get it. It's something really bizarre and weird like that.
Yeah,
it's a weird, but sixth would still get you Europa League in that case. But which is, I mean, at the end of the day, We just want another European tour. Let's face it, we're desperate for it. But
let's face it, even though it was a short one, we had a nicer one than then up the road. Even if theirs does end up with some kind of silverware.
No, you know, I mean, we've got got it all. We got it all to play for. I mean, the fact that there's still so much going on in this table at the moment, it is still, there's not too many dead rubbers at this stage of the season, which there normally is by now. But so, you know, and obviously Villa have got a claw back that goal they conceded in the first leg. They're at home of Villa Park on Thursday, so hopefully they'll overturn Forest and get themselves to the final, and then it's still all to play for, isn't it?
It's all to play for. We've got three games which we're capable of winning. I mean, basically, we've just got to concentrate on that, let the chips fall where they may in the other games. But if we win all three, I think we'll at least get seventh spot, which could mean conference football, or we could get sixth, which would be Europa League. The Champions League thing requires quite a few things to happen, which are not, totally implausible, but. Yeah, who knows? I mean, games are weird at this end of the season, at this time in the season. So we don't know, but let's, we need to bounce back from Saturday's disappointment. We're normally quite good at doing that. And I do think, Wolves, sadly now that, that ship has sunk, and I think they're all heading for the life rafts. So
I mean, the other thing is there are, because there's three, we're still three games out, there are so many permutations available. It's not worth working them out. And even if you did, there's nothing anyone can do about it apart from, seeing what happens once the teams play their, those nine respective games.
Yeah. I mean, people have been talking and saying, what competition do you want? Or do you think we should do, I would rather this, that, and the other. Basically, I want whatever our position merits, whether that is Champions League, courtesy of Villa, whether it's Europa League, in that we managed to finish in sixth on merit, or Conference League, if we finish seventh, or if we miss out, it will just be like, we will get what we deserve. We've got the opportunity to get these points at the end of the season. If we don't get them, we don't get them. If we do, then, happy days.
Well, now, Andy, I mean, you're suggesting that you can get into competitions on merit. I mean, what happens if you win the FA Cup? I mean, surely you get,
That's merit as well. It's just if you don't run your club well, then you get demerited.
Check your emails. That's all I'm going to say. Check your emails. But that is it. That is all we have time for this week. So hopefully when we come back next week, we'll be talking about a six-star display against Wolves, as we've seen before. But until then, thank you so much to Vicky Rees. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. And if you can, go to the RadioReverb.com and hit that donate button. Thanks again. See you again next week. Bye. Taking candy from a baby. ABC, falling in love with you was easy for me. And you can do it too, it's easy. Like taking candy from a baby. Baby, there's nothing hard about. As easy as pie. The hard part is living without love. Without your love, baby, I would die. 1, 2, 3. It's easy. Like taking from a baby, hey, 1 and 1 are 2, 1 and 1 are 2.
take it.